The Week's Geek, hosted by Ralph Tromsey.
All right, how's it going, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to The Week's Peak. I'm your host, Ralph Tronchi, and Duso. But today, we have a great episode coming your way with a very good friend of mine who I've known a long time. So it's my honor to introduce the one and only Parker Punio. Parker, how's it going, sir?
Hey, what's up? It's going good. How are you?
Pretty good.
That's good.
So before we get into things, feel free just to introduce yourself, who you are, how we met, all that good stuff. All
right. Yeah. So I'm Parker Punio. Ralph and I met in, I think, second grade. And we've been friends since. I transferred out of that school in sixth grade. And even though we don't go to the same school, we still played video games every once in a while. You know, that was fun times.
Definitely.
And yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So obviously we've known each other for a very long time, right?
Yeah.
It goes way back. So yeah, it's great to have you.
Thank you.
On the show.
Thank you.
So today, we are, as you saw by the title, we're talking about all things space.
Yep. Right?
So I'm excited for this because I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about like space and all that, but I've always been interested.
All right.
It's going to be fun to see, and just to learn a lot, about this subject. But first things first, I know like you're very into this, right?
Yeah. Yep.
How did you first, you know, develop that interest of space and all that?
Well, I find it very interesting that I actually remember how I got into space. It started one day in sixth grade. I went to the park to shoot some basketball hoops, right? And I had always been interested in, like, aviation and, like, fighter jets and stuff, but never, like, really focused on space that much. I mean, I was a Star Wars fan since I was very young. And, yeah, so I went to the park to play some basketball, and I heard my name, and my friend comes running over, and he was actually there with his Boy Scout troop launching model rockets. And, he wanted to show me him launching his model rocket, right? And I went with him to like this big open field, and then he was like, hey, do you want to launch my rocket? And I was like, dude, heck yeah. And then I launched it, and it was like so cool and just really cool to watch. And then ever since then, I was just extremely interested in space. I watch YouTube videos and talk with my dad in the car about a ton of space stuff, like black holes and warp drive and everything. And that's pretty much how I started getting interested in space. And I have actually been to a space camp, like the big one in Huntsville, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to it twice, actually. Shout out to Marineris Expedition number 47 and Descartes Expedition number 14. Those were a lot of fun. And I also ended up starting a club at my school called the Theoretical Astrophysics Club. We got 50 people in the first 2 weeks, which I just thought was crazy. We just talk about all things space. And then we got up to 70 members, which we have maintained for a year now. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. And yeah.
So obviously, you know, when you make a legit club, like that means like you're no joke about this stuff, right?
Yeah. Like I spent like 3 hours a week making a presentation for every meeting Tuesday at lunch. And I just loved doing it. Like I actually liked making these presentations because I got to research even more stuff that really interested me. And I learned a lot along the way. And ever since we've gone a meeting every Tuesday at school that we could. So like obviously no meetings on weeks where we'd have like Tuesdays off or something. So yeah, we're 36 meetings strong. We started December of not last year, but the year before that.
And what goes on during these meetings?
Okay, so our club meetings, we consisted, or th they mainly consisted of me giving lectures of presentations I would make that I just really enjoyed doing because I learned a lot doing them and spreading the passion for space and a lot of other people, or most of the people I came to the meetings really enjoyed them. And they learned a lot. And we would also do competitions. And in these competitions, people would try to, or they would kind of like group up and then just compete in these little theoretical competitions of like trying to think of all the factors to make a habitable planet. Like, there's a lot of factors that go into that. It has to be like in the right orbit around the sun. It has to have a certain amount of water, certain amount of oxygen, all these different things. And we'd also have competitions of like the best way to get to Proxima Centauri, which is our closest star. That's about 4.14 light years away. And then we also had some field trips too. We went on two this school year. One was to see Adam Stelzner speak, who was the chief engineer for either the Opportunity or the Curiosity rover. I think the Curiosity Mars rover. And then we also went on a field trip to see a guy talk about the Hubble telescope at an aerospace museum. And I was really proud of organizing those field trips, and I started trying to get hoodies for my club too. And I was about to get them, and then the quarantine came, so I was unable to follow through with that.
So, it looks like, you're not just like limited to a room, you're even going out, and about. And then I know from my experience, just being, a headpiece of a club, it takes a lot of time and energy. How much time do you put into this? It looks like you've done a lot, and how much, effort, has gone into this club.
Yeah, so it's easier in the first semester when things aren't like as busy because I play rugby in the spring, yeah, so I don't do any sports in the first semester in the fall and winter, and I'd put like 3 hours a week into making presentations just because I really like doing it. I really enjoyed learning more about space as I went. And then I got better at making those presentations and more efficient, so it narrowed down to only being like 45 minutes to an hour to make them. But it would vary on what we were doing each week. So like if we were going on a field trip, I'd probably spend like 5 to 6 hours that week because I needed to make sure everybody's forms and like money were in to for like tickets and stuff like that.
And how do you organize, these field trips?
Well, I heard about the event, and then I went to the club moderator. Every club at my school has a moderator, which is like a teacher, and then they get a field trip form. Everybody who wants to go signs the form, and then they turn in whatever amount of money to get their tickets.
That's cool. That's
Yep.
cool. So, if someone wants to join this club, right, is there any requirements? Do they have to be like super knowledgeable, or
No,
can it be someone,
yeah,
who
it's funny you say that because I made a little slogan for joining the club. Like, you don't have to be smart to come to the club. You just have to come to the club to be smart, because you learn a lot when you go to the meetings. And I simplify it so it's easy to understand even some more complex things like super string theory and M theory and the physics of bosons, and I used to be more knowledgeable at the beginning of the school year, but I haven't been brushing up as much in like particle physics, but I still know like a good amount about string theory and stuff.
Right, gotcha.
But yeah, I just find all the large scale things really cool, like stars, black holes, all that.
So, for someone who might have an interest in, space and all that, how long does it take to, become more knowledgeable, and how much time have you put into, just, getting more knowledgeable, I guess, the best way I can describe
YouTube. That is where I just
it.
watch a lot of YouTube videos. There's a lot of good channels that simplify complex ideas and stuff. Like Kurzgesagt, I think they're German. It's a German YouTube channel that is pretty popular, and they'd have a lot of cool videos on stuff like large drives for space travel and like warp drives and all these cool things. So yeah, I mean it's really just YouTube, and I went to space camp. I learned a lot more about realistic space history. So rather than the theoretical stuff, more like the history of rocketry and history of astronauts and stuff. So yeah, I mean it's just personal research. I haven't taken any classes or anything in space stuff, and yeah.
Cool. Yeah, if someone wanted to get into it, where would you recommend, they start? What, like topic inside of space, like where would you start?
Well, the topic that I probably started with was black holes. There's components of black holes, and I can even explain a little bit on here. Well, they're so think about black holes is nobody knows what's inside of them, right? They're it's when a star gets so massive, it has so much gravity that it collapses in on itself to become an infinitely dense singularity in space-time, which is like something our brains can't even comprehend. And they sorry, I'm just looking at my notes here. They have an accretion disk, something jets, I forgot, they're something jets, and then they have their event horizon in multiple levels of it. So the accretion disk is the rings you see in artists' renditions of black holes. They're extremely bright because they're a bunch of luminous matter, so it's like stars getting sucked into a black hole. They're sped up and they're going so fast that they heat up, so they become extremely bright. And they go towards a black hole, and a lot of people know with black holes, nothing can escape their pull, not even light, after it passes the event horizon. The event horizon is like the edge of the big black bubble you think of when you think of black holes. So like once you pass that, there's no going back. And that's when spaghettification occurs, which is when everything gets stretched out and distorted. So like a human would just get stretched to being extremely long. It's, I mean, obviously they wouldn't be able to live to see that, but it's black holes just fascinate me because they're so mysterious, but they're so real. They're like a single black hole that you can't even see because it's so small could literally eat the entire Earth. And then after doing that, it could become bigger and then consume the entire solar system, which it's crazy to think about. And neutron stars, which are similar to black holes. We talk more about that later on, but neutron stars are also really cool because they're the second most dense thing in the universe besides black holes. And
Wow.
those are really cool too. Yeah, you got any questions about black holes?
I'm fascinated, like, with all of that you just said right there. Like, because I never, I mean, you think black holes and you know, the common thoughts that come with that, but like when you explain it like scientifically and all that, and what it's really capable of, I think it blows my mind, to be honest, you know.
Yeah, and I'm looking it up here to find what the names of the jets are, because I can't remember exactly, but the jets, relativistic jets, which I'm pretty sure are the things that, like, when you're looking at the accretion disk, which is like a ring around the black hole, if you imagine there's a poles, like a north and south pole, something, if you imagine that, those are where the relativistic jets are. It's where they shoot out what I'm pretty sure is Hawking radiation, which is like black holes, nothing can escape it, right? But wrong, because Stephen Hawking developed an idea that black holes actually spit out matter, and that's Hawking radiation. And it's basically black holes evaporating. So in like Googleplex years, like 10 to the 100th power to the 100th power or something, that many years, the only thing left in the universe will be black holes, because black holes are going to be the thing that live the longest, because they suck everything up and make their life longer. But once there's nothing else for them to suck up, then they'll just evaporate, because there's nothing to sustain them. So over time, they'll evaporate. And then once they evaporate, there will be nothing left in the universe. But that's in a long, long time from now.
Right. And, you know, what goes into, you know, all this research, you know, and finding all this stuff out? Because I assume it's pretty difficult to do, no?
It's really not. I mean, if you just have the interest for space and you find it fascinating and you're someone who goes outside at night, looks up at the sky, sees all the stars, and think, man, everything there is out there is so much more than just a few dots of light in the sky. Uh-huh. Everything out there is real and way bigger than our little confined planet. And we are extremely small in this huge universe that's constantly expanding. And if you have the drive for it, you just want to watch a bunch of YouTube videos, go to NASA's website, go to different trusted websites, follow some theoretical physicists. The most famous probably theoretical physicist is Neil deGrasse Tyson. But I also follow another one, Brian Greene. He has some developed theories on string theory. He's a pretty cool guy. But yeah, if you just have the drive to learn more about space, all you need is the internet. And I'm considering getting more education in space in college. I'm considering aerospace engineering right now for a major, because I would really like to be an astronaut when I'm older. But yeah, it just takes the natural drive to want to learn more about space.
Got it, yeah. So a lot of just passion for it, huh? Wow.
Yep.
You mentioned potentially you want to become an astronaut, I see.
Mm-hmm.
What goes into, I don't know if you're, how much you know, but I mean, in terms of like training and all that, how does one become, you know, an astronaut?
Well, they changed the requirements recently, but before it was at least a bachelor's degree in some math or science, 3 years of professional experience, and being able to pass a physical test. That is all it took to apply to be an astronaut. Now, the application process is much harder, because once you have that experience in education, which recently has been changed to, instead of bachelor's degree and 3 years of experience, it's now 2 years of professional experience with a bachelor's and master's degree, I believe. And NASA recently started recruiting astronauts for their Orion program, to basically go back to the moon and then Mars eventually. But once you get past, or if you get past, which tens of thousands of other people apply to be astronauts, they only accept, I think, like 120 candidates, and then you have to
Wow.
go through like a year of interviews and stuff to pass the candidate process. And then I think they take something like 60 candidates and then actually take them to train to be astronauts. And then once after that year-long thing, they then have to go through like 2 more years of training and then even more training after that to become an astronaut.
Wow.
But a lot of astronauts in the past, well, the route I was thinking is the engineering path, that you can go the engineering or the military path, which you can also do engineering in that, but a lot of people that go the military path will go and be fighter pilots or test pilots. And then in that case, you have to have like 1,000 hours of flight time as a commander or something like that, to be an astronaut with those requirements. But yeah.
So it's a lot. Yeah, it's
Definitely is. Yeah.
wow.
Yep.
Cool. So in shoot, hold on. I had a question in my head. I forgot it though. Hold up.
It's all right. I can talk more about black holes. There's one thing I forgot to mention that is one of like the craziest things in my opinion is that with supermassive black holes, they're crazy, right? There is a black hole, well, there are actually multiple supermassive black holes that are so big that they are the event horizon is bigger than our solar system, which
Wow.
is incomprehensible. Like you think of our sun and the like its reach to Pluto, and it actually goes even farther to something called the Kuiper Belt, and something even farther than that called the Oort cloud. And to think that there are black holes bigger than that is in not possible to even think about.
Right. Wow.
And the thing is that there's a supermassive black hole at the center of each of, well, if not most, galaxies. And because they're so big, they literally have billions of stars orbiting this black hole. That's what we're doing right now. We're orbiting our sun, but our sun is orbiting a supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy called Sagittarius A. The orbit of the sun around the black hole is a long time. I think it's like a couple million years or something. But that's because our galaxy is 100,000 light years across. And clarify, a light year is the distance light travels in a year, which is far, extremely far. And at the center, have you heard of binary systems or tertiary systems,
I
star
have not,
systems? Yeah,
no.
so it's basically where there's more than one sun in a solar system. So think like Tatooine from Star Wars, where there are two suns. That's actually where they orbit each other around the center of mass. And these are pretty unstable solar systems because they are orbiting each other and they are bound to eventually collide with each other. I'll just let you think about that
Wow.
for a second.
Yeah, no, that like this just blows my mind, right? 'Cause I never like gone into the details and all that, and just hearing that is just it blows my mind, honestly. I don't know, but
That blows mine too.
it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, our closest star system is the Alpha Centauri star system. It consists of three stars, but only two of them are orbiting each other, Alpha Centauri A and Alpha Centauri B. So we actually have a binary system 4.2 light years away from our planet, which is extremely close, on a space level, because everything in space is extremely spread out. And the third star system is Proxima Centauri, which is a red dwarf star, so it's a young star, and it doesn't give off as much light as our sun does. But it also has exoplanets that we think may be habitable by humans, which 4.1 light years away is extremely far for us, but that's really close on an astronomical scale. And with these star systems, it gets even crazier. At the center of galaxies, near black holes, the density and distance between star systems are even closer. There are black holes, and then there are supermassive black holes. Supermassive black holes are at the center of galaxies, while these smaller black holes can actually orbit a sun, and you can have a binary system consisting of a star and a black hole, which is so cool to think about. But also, since the gravity at the center of galaxies is so intense, there are star systems that can have 10 or more stars all orbiting each other and some black holes in there, and they're just all orbiting each other in this fury before they all collide and fall into the accretion disk of the supermassive black hole, Sagittarius A. And this is all real stuff that is happening that is way bigger than our sun. Like these stars, most stars are bigger than ours, I'm pretty sure, except for neutron stars. Do you remember your question? Because I want to hear some of your input before I go into neutron stars.
I'm just gonna be real with you. I'm speechless, bro. Like, you just, because, I always knew, like, space, right? But then, like I said, just going into detail, that's what fascinates me the most, and learning how just all of this is just it's so much bigger than us, is incredible. But
We're
wow,
extremely small.
yeah, it's crazy. Cool. Well, I know you probably have some more points to talk about, but before we do that, I want to go into our halftime prime time, where we ask five questions and just give me some answers. Take a break a little bit. All right.
All right, sounds good.
Cool. So, question number one, go ahead and just describe yourself in three words for us.
Well, I'm thinking passionate, which I think I've demonstrated on this podcast.
For sure, for sure.
I would say trustworthy and confident.
Okay.
I lack confidence at some points, but other times I'll have a lot of confidence.
Okay,
And
okay.
I think that's thanks to my martial art background. I did a lot of martial arts, and that taught me a lot of confidence and discipline.
Nice. Cool.
Thank you.
So, question number two, what, in your opinion, makes someone a hero?
Wow, that's deep. I would say bravery, selflessness, and being able to stay calm in like emergencies. Also, or I think there's like two types of heroes. There are like emergency heroes, like law enforcement and firefighters and paramedics. But then there's also like heroes that are on a broader scale that help people without even needing to meet them in person. Like I mentioned before, I'm a Star Wars fan, huge Star Wars fan, always have been. And I'd consider George Lucas a hero, the creator of Star Wars, like a hero for like a lot of people, because a lot of people are really passionate about Star Wars. So that could apply to other people too.
Cool. Wow, that's a heck of an answer. I wasn't expecting that. Wow. But I like that a lot. Wow.
Thank you.
Cool. All right. So we're gonna move on to some some more not too deep questions here.
Okay.
If you could close one fast food chain, what would it be?
That's deep. That's deep. Well, let me think. I mean, I know a lot of people like. I feel like McDonald's has really taken a downturn.
You're about to make a lot of people mad. I'm gonna tell you right now.
Well, I mean, their food tastes good, but it's not exactly the healthiest. But that's pretty much the same with every restaurant. And I'd say, I feel like any of them that I'd say would make a lot of people mad. Because everybody likes some fast food place. I guess it would, personally, I would not care if McDonald's and or Taco Bell were shut down.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
All right, and we'll go into our final question, because I just want to get back into the science stuff. But so, all right. Final question, do you have any guilty pleasures?
I mean, I guess probably back to Star Wars again. Like, I used to just obsess over Star Wars, because that was like my thing when I was younger. That was something that I always just looked to for, like, watching a movie or watching a show or just using my imagination as a little kid. But, I mean, still, I still really like Star Wars. Like, that's still kind of my thing. Right. Like, it's just something.
Cool.
Also, video games. Video games, too. I play too many video games.
Define too many.
Also, too much. I play a lot, you know, like Call of Duty. Play a lot of Watch Dogs 2 with my friend. Every once in a while, some GTA. Maybe pull up the old Minecraft, some CSGO. I quit Fortnite like a year ago because I just didn't like it anymore.
It's Fortnite, man. That's it.
Yeah. I played the new Star Wars game, also Jedi Fallen Order. I played Spider-Man PS4. I just played a lot more games.
Cool. All right, so there y'all have it. They're your most requested halftime prompting questions, so let's get back into it.
All right.
2 seconds, and then we'll get back into it.
Okay.
You know what? What I might do is... Yeah, I'm gonna end this call, and then I'm going to start a new one so I have segments. All right, I'm going to send you another link in 2 seconds. All right, so we're back, everyone. Let's get ready to learn some more, because I'm just fascinated, as I said so many times in this episode, but I want to learn some more. So go for it, man. Educate us.
All right, so now with neutron stars, these things are pretty crazy. They are, as I said before, the second most dense thing in the universe besides black holes. These things are so dense that a teaspoon of neutron star matter would weigh more than the Empire State Building.
Wow.
Just a teaspoon. That is how dense these things are. And to think that black holes are even more dense, like, you just can't even comprehend it. But yeah, so neutron stars, they are extremely dense. They have a lot going on inside them. So because they are so dense, astronomers think that there could be more elements that we have not made yet inside neutron stars. And I don't remember after what number, but like all the elements on the periodic table that are after the number 100 for the atomic number, they that they are not found in nature on Earth because they have to be made in a lab because of atoms can only hold so many protons and electrons on them. So currently, the highest or like heaviest atom is oganesson, which has an atomic number of 118. So it has 100. Well, I actually don't know for sure, but it's about 118 protons and 118 electrons. But the problem is that once you start putting more protons and electrons on, then you start the atom becomes unstable because it cannot hold all those electrons and all those protons. So that's why it's so hard to make new elements, because making new elements is just adding more protons and electrons on. And yeah, so making more, or astronomers think that density, like intense density, can force electrons and protons onto atoms, allowing even newer elements to be made on neutron stars. And also in neutron stars, they mess with things on the level of the subatomic particles. So as you learn in school, they're the basic subatomic particles of protons, neutrons, and electrons. There are more than that, but those are the basic ones you learn. And then protons, neutrons, and electrons are made of things called quarks. About three quarks make up every subatomic particle, I believe. There's up, down, top, bottom, strange, and charm quarks. Those are actual the names of the different type of quarks. And they're because neutron stars are so dense, they also rip atoms apart and just make free-flowing quarks. And the craziest type of quark, in my opinion, is the strange quark. They are found only in neutron stars, I'm pretty sure. And the thing with them is that now I'm not a Trekkie. I don't watch too much Star Trek, but I know of red matter in Star Trek. Like one drop can destroy a planet, right? Well, this is the real life version of that. Strange matter is so strange, we have no clue how it works. But as soon as a strange quark or a strange strangelet, which is like a bunch of strange quarks, as soon as it touches another quark, it makes that quark a strange quark. So if
Wow.
one strange quark was to touch the Earth, it would start making everything on Earth strange quarks. So, neutron stars can break apart atoms. That is how dense and chaotic they are. And they break them down to the subatomic level of quarks. And these quarks, you have. Wait, sorry, my internet's been going down, so I don't remember what I've said and what I have not said. So, I'll recap, even though it may have only been a minute since I said it. There are up, down, top, bottom, strange, and charm quarks. So there are a lot of strange quarks in neutron stars, and neutron stars often, well, not often, but will explode, and the strange matter is below the surface, and they will explode these things called strangelets, which can be anywhere from one quark to all these quarks of or strange quarks, like the size of a school bus, which is crazy to think about. But like, if one can go hurtling through space, and then if I mean it's because of the scale of space is unlikely for when a neutron star explodes that then strangelet will come in contact with another stellar body, but still happens. And when they neutron stars actually go hypernova instead of supernova because they have so much more energy and they explode so much bigger. They either do that or they become a black hole and collapse on themselves. But there's also different types of neutron stars like quasars and pulsars. And when they explode and these strangelets go everywhere. Like, just one strangelet could turn an entire planet into strange matter. Like, just one quark. Because we don't know how they work, but they, as soon as they touch another, like, atom or quark, they turn that atom or quark into more strange matter, which is crazy, and the physics like that we know of are altered inside of neutron stars. So yeah, that's how neutron stars can affect other stellar bodies because they're strange matter, like red matter does in Star Trek.
How is like research done on this by like scientists and all that? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. They utilize a lot of the satellites orbiting the Earth that take pictures and monitor light coming from other star systems. And they run a whole bunch of calculations and they figure out like what they can even find out what certain types of planets are made of.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Like they found a planet that is made completely of diamond.
Mm.
Like that's because the pressure there is so much and it's just crazy. So yeah. You got any more questions?
To right now, no, honestly, but you know, I mean I've been, you know, I sound like a broken record player saying this, but I'm just fascinated, bro. Like, but I definitely want to do my own research too.
Awesome.
And yeah, but we're almost out of time. But I'm sure the audience enjoyed this just as much as I did. We definitely probably gained some, I gained some interest definitely. And we're going to do a part two for sure.
Yeah, I'd be happy to be on the podcast again.
Definitely, definitely. But before we go, to anyone out there who has gained interest in any of this, and just want to do some of their own research as well, can you go ahead and just re-say just where they can go, what are some good resources and some reliable places they can go just to learn more?
Right. So so just YouTube, looking up YouTube videos like black holes, neutron stars, warp drive, which we could go over next time. Just looking it up on YouTube, going to NASA's website, checking their archives, following different astronomers and theoretical physicists like Neil deGrasse Tyson, Brian Greene, and yeah, just going on the internet. Good YouTube channel. I think I said before is Kurzgesagt, German YouTube channel. It's like KURZ. GEAGT or something. I forget. But yeah, that's just how I taught myself a lot of these things. So
cool. Well, yeah. Again, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Yep, no,
it was a lot of fun. And we look forward to the next one, sir.
Thanks. And you yeah. You mind if I plug my Instagram?
Hey, go for it, my guy.
All right, yeah. At Parkito12. Parkito 1-2.
Perfect. Hey, go follow. Make sure to do that.
All right.
Also, be sure follow The Week's Peak at The Week's Peak as well.
Yeah.
And that being said, do you have any last words for people?
This is seems like a pretty great podcast. Make sure to follow it.
Hey, I appreciate that.
Yep, no problem.
All right, everybody. We got over the peak. We'll see you at the next one. Until then. Adios.
Adios.